This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the latest attempts to end the conflict in the Middle East and pharmaceutical tests for inmates. Joining us to discuss these topics and more is Robert George, editorial writer from the New York Post. He joins us from our New York bureau. Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University, joins us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. And Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press, which is seen in the Boston area, joins us from the studios of Harvard University. All right, folks, thanks very much. Let's talk a little bit about what has been talked about all weekend long, and that is this, at best, tenuous ceasefire. Callie, one of the interesting things when you see ceasefires like this, you see carnage and destruction and fires and firearms being waged those last 15 minutes. It's almost, let me get in my best shot here before we have to stop this. The question becomes whether or not this is really going to be a ceasefire that holds. It seems to me that all sides don't necessarily believe that to be the case.
I think you're exactly right. It's very tenuous, and even though both sides have expressed that they want the shooting to stop and the killing to stop, you know, there's a little bit of concern because you've got 10 days before the international peacekeeping troops arrive. So what happens during that time? I saw some reports where the soldiers on the Israeli side were expressing relief that there was just quiet and that nothing was happening. But it was very clear from their stance that if anything, the slightest thing should happen from the Hezbollah side, if you will, that this is going to spark everything. Plus, I think that there's a spark that can be ignited when those refugees, those million or so folks who have been huddled in caves and other little caches around Lebanon trying to avoid the Israeli assault, get back to their what used to be their homes. They are now homeless. And the reality of that has got to stir some anger that we've not seen yet, in addition to, of course, all the murders and the deaths. So tenuous is the word that I would use. I'm very hopeful because this part of the world, we absolutely need peace. And at the very least, a ceasefire.
Marcelo, what's interesting, too, is it seems as though, and what is often missed when we talk about, in particular, the Middle East and trying to find peace there, is if you don't sit people down and change a mindset, you can stop the bombs for a while, but it really is the mindset of the people who have to come to some conclusion of a happy medium that will eradicate the violence that we continue to see.
Now, the hard work of diplomacy and really the hard work of talking and negotiating will begin. Ed, the devil dwells in the details, and as you mentioned, this is highly unstable. This is in a way will depend on the kind of bite the UN peacekeepers will have in terms of really enforcing a regime where everyone's incentives are in a way at least partially met. So the hard work begins now. This is very fragile. There are already reports that the ceasefire has been violated. We will have to see how the transition to the UN regime will actually work in terms of the details of keeping the folk that are shooting at each other away from each other.
Robert, let me broaden this to the Bush administration on a front that we have seen at best difficult for them to manage with all of these balls up in the air, and that's foreign policy and dealing with not only the conflict here but the Iraqi war that continues to plague the Bush administration. And now we saw with the last week's plot that was foiled, and now what some consider in Michigan a possible terrorist attack on the Mackinac Bridge, we are seeing cracks and chinks in the armor in the sense of just having to deal with all of these things at one time.
Well, it's exactly right, because the entire focus, obviously, of the war on terror and particularly the Iraq war is with the idea that it's going to make Americans safer. The president said after the revelation of the foiled plot that America is safer than it was 5 years ago, but it's not completely safe. I would wonder if people actually feel that when they suddenly learn that they can't take bottles of water on board planes, and we're hearing about possible terrorist cell or terrorist cell phones, I guess you could say, in Michigan and Ohio, and obviously as looking at what's going on in the Middle East, one of the problems that the Bush administration is facing is that it looks on the surface that what we have in place now, post Iraq war and post war on terror, are more extreme regimes or more extreme situations than there were 5 years ago. Now you've got a de facto civil war between the Shia and the Sunni in Iraq. You've got Hezbollah, which arguably, from a public relations position, is in a stronger position than it was a month ago when the Israelis decided to go in. And Israel's government, the Olmert government, is seriously unstable. With many Israelis feeling that Olmert is in over his head, and that may empower Likud and Benjamin Netanyahu, who are far hardliners. So the administration is very hard pressed to really say that that things are in a better situation than they were 3 and 4 years ago.
Marcelo, let me ask you to prognosticate a bit for me, if you will, in terms of the sentiment of the American public by virtue of what's enough. Enough is enough. We see these men arrested outside of Detroit, about 80 miles outside of Detroit, purchasing phones at Walmart, about 80. They had 1,000 cell phones already in their van. They say they were purchasing these phones to take to Texas to sell for profit. Authorities are concerned that this was part of a plan to blow up the bridge. We see the question of what you can and cannot take on airliners now. We're seeing this movement and a cry from a corner from some people who are suggesting that we're taking this thing a bit too far. Is
so we
there
go
too
back
far
to the
in this?
That's the question, Ed. What it seems we are facing now is a global metastasis of self-generating cells that will require really a completely different mindset, a completely different agenda than the agenda we are pursuing today in Iraq, more broadly in the Middle East. This is an era that will require more international cooperation. This is an era that will require a much, much closer synchronicity as agencies within nation states take on the challenge of dismantling these self-generating, radicalizing cells. This requires the kinds of political sensibilities that the current administration really has not shown capabilities in. We need a major proactive international agenda to coordinate our efforts to take on these issues in a way that is much, much more sophisticated than what we're pursuing today.
All right. Let me turn our attention, if we might, to a federal panel of medical advisors that is now recommending that the government loosen regulations that severely limit the testing of pharmaceuticals on prison inmates. This was common practice up until the 1970s, Callie Crossley, where inmates were paid about $100 a month to test these items, and the items ran from something as innocuous as dandruff treatment to many other things. When you take a look at this, particularly African Americans in this country, by virtue of the Tuskegee experiment and other historical issues, are very leery of this, and one has to, with the disproportionate number of black men in prison, assume that this once again will disproportionately affect the African American community if this comes about.
Absolutely, and I think the specter of Tuskegee is one that always hangs over us when we talk about experimentation, and certainly in this case, it's absolutely pinpointed to a captive audience, if you will, or a captive population, and that's exactly what those men in Tuskegee were. And so it's hard for, I think, African Americans to see if there would be benefit on the other side. Some of the critics have suggested that for the most part, a lot of these men cannot read and so are not at a place to sign an informed consent. And in fact, in some of the abuses in the past were done to men who did not sign an informed consent. And then, of course, you have the whole it would be enticing to do something that would bring you more money than whatever the 15 cents you might be making doing the work inside the prison. Now, having said that, outside of the prison population, if somebody wants to be a part, a volunteer part of a drug trial, they automatically get better health care. And that's the question, would that happen here for these men? I mean, but that is part and parcel of being a volunteer in an experimental program outside of the prison population. If that could somehow be assured, maybe there's some benefit there, because there is long-going arguments that these men are not getting the basic health care that they need. So to get a superior level of health care, I don't know. Is that a trade-off that some might like to make if given informed consent? It's kind of an interesting it's hard without knowing the very specifics that the new program might take to look at the risks and the benefits.
Robert, what we're seeing is a promise by those who are pushing for this that provisions intended in the new system would prevent the problems that plagued the earlier program, and that was abuse. And as Callie just suggested, many of these men didn't even necessarily know what they were signing up for. Do you believe that this can be policed by the federal government based on the history that we've seen?
I think it's fair to say that it is a good enough reason to be skeptical given what has happened in the past. However, I mean, it really does come down to what Callie said about how much consent is going to be elicited from this group. I mean, it should also be kept in mind that that research, particularly for African Americans and other minorities, medical research is often lacking than it is for the broader population. So I could see an upside on this in that. That because you do have a large minority population here, that you are going to be able to get more insights to specific medical background for minorities.
Because that depends on what you're testing as well, though, Robert.
With that caveat. However, I mean, I think the key thing is with Tuskegee, they didn't have informed consent. B, there was obviously blatant deception that was going on. At least in this case, there's discussion ahead of time about what is going on, in a sense, basically inviting public scrutiny and outside observers. So I think, given that, it could work, and it could work to the benefit of both the individuals and the broader public.
Marcelo?
The hallmark of scientific, especially in the medical domain, research is really the bedrock of informed consent, the idea that a person can make a rational choice, an autonomous choice, that will, in the long term, benefit him or her. The question of how much autonomy does an inmate have, the question of the kinds of subtle pressures that might come to bear, the question of really fully understanding what one is signing up for, are fundamental questions that have very profound ethical implications in the context of a history that has a lot of very ugly footnotes in medical research, not only in our country. We talked earlier about what's going on in Africa, and of course we saw what happened in Europe during World War II with medical research on inmates. This is, you know, a very, very, it's an area where the moral and ethical implications are tremendously profound, and we need to proceed very cautiously.
Callie, does this concern you with the issue of, again, what you say in private versus what you say in public? There are a lot of people, quite frankly, in this country who still get the sense and have the sense that, hey, these men and women committed atrocities against society. That's why they are housed in jail at this moment. And, you know, you get what you reap what you sow, so to speak.
Well, this is something extra. This is not. I mean, they're already in prison serving time, and they're being punished. So this is not. This cannot be considered in the same way. And I think what Marcelo said is absolutely something that should remain in the forefront. I mean, there is always a risk of abuse, and has been, and people have sort of lost their minds thinking that if I have a captive population, and I can do what I will. And that is not certainly something that we have ever subscribed to in the United States, and it cannot be done to the least of us, because then we know that it is readily available to happen to those of us who have some other options.
All right. Robert, Marcelo, and Callie, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Thank you.